Well, bless you. Good morning to all of you. So good to see you. Like was mentioned, we have a number of our families that are out of town, traveling on vacation and whatnot. So we are extremely glad to have you with us. Be strong and courageous. That is our theme for this year, and we want to be strong and courageous in all these aspects that we're talking about. You might recall that a few weeks ago, we started a prayer request for our own congregation, that we need to continue to pray that God would bless us and lead visitors from our community to us. And so let's keep those prayers going. We've seen some already answered, and we want to just keep those to be strong and courageous in those prayers. We want to be strong and courageous in our marriage. And we're going to get back into our series called The Language of Love and Respect. How we can improve our marriages by improving how we communicate to one another. Such an important part, because marriages break down first and foremost because of communication. So just a quick little review. If this doesn't make sense to you, please go back and watch or listen to the previous lessons. But we're talking about, and no shock to us, that men and women are different, right? Men and women are different. They speak different. They communicate different. They expect communication and what they need from that differently. And so, as our book talks about, to just kind of remember that, we talked about how women speak in pink. In other words, they like to communicate and have communicated to them love. Whereas men, most men, like the language of respect. They want it to be felt as they're communicated that they're being respected. And when we don't do that, then things break down. So, by recognizing that we speak differently than our spouse and making adjustments so that we can better communicate to our spouse on their level of what they need and what they're wanting, then what we can do is we can enter into what we call the energizing cycle. And the energizing cycle is a wonderful cycle where there is a lot of great feelings in marriage, a lot of energy in marriage. And this is where, let's say, a husband makes the adjustments, recognizes that his wife speaks in pink. And so he speaks in pink to her. He tries the best he can to speak in love to her. And so what happens is that she receives that, and she's energized by that. She is motivated to make the adjustments herself, and so she will speak to her husband in blue, with respect. And he is energized by that, and he is motivated to continue to communicate on her level, which motivates her then to communicate on his desire and his need, and it just goes on, and it's this great energizing cycle. But when we don't do that, we enter into what we started talking about last time, the crazy cycle. And this is where, for one reason or another, we don't energize one another. We don't speak and make those adjustments to our spouse. And so often we go back to the old habits and we speak the way we want to speak, and we communicate in blue and she communicates in pink, and we're not getting it, she's not getting it, and pretty soon we're not energized, we're in the crazy cycle. And this morning we're going to talk about not only the crazy cycle, but where we don't stop, we don't recognize it, in fact we give ourselves into it, and how we can spin in this crazy cycle out of control. How many of us remember this little playground piece of equipment? Right? It's called the merry-go-round.
And a lot of us will be brought back to, well, the young people, their playgrounds look a lot better than ours did. This is kind of what we grew up with, a playground with grass and dirt. You can see kind of the rackety old slide in the back. It's kind of bent, but didn't matter. We still go down that dangerous slide, right? And then we have something like this. And of course, this was fun, wasn't it, for about 5 seconds. And you get on this thing, and your dad, or maybe you have a couple friends that start spinning you around, and you're enjoying it. And then you're like, okay, that's good. And of course, your dad thinks it's funny to keep spinning and to go faster and faster and faster. And you want to jump off, but you can't jump off because you know that, one, it's unsafe because you're going so fast. And number two, just the whole momentum spinning in this cycle just is like taking you to the center, not outwardly. It's hard to jump off these things. And so you just have to go to the middle and just kind of hang on until your dad or your friend stop and this thing finally comes to an end. And then you can get off and throw up. And then, you know, that's the way it was, wasn't it?
We don't have these much today because, well, they're not the safest things in the world.
But that's a really good illustration of what happens to some marriages where they get to the crazy cycle, and instead of stopping, for one reason or another, they keep spinning it faster and faster.
Marriages are then not energized. They start to fall apart. And so, God gave us some homework last time. Not me, but God did. Some homework to work on better communication. Some steps to recognize, uh-oh, my wife and I are entering into the crazy zone. And that's the ultimate goal, is to stay out of the crazy cycle, but ultimately at least to recognize, uh-oh, we're on safe territory here. We're running aground. We're entering the crazy cycle so that we can stop it and we can reverse it. And so the first homework that God gave us is just to remind ourselves, to continue to remember that men and women speak different languages. Love versus respect. Pink versus blue. How many of us have been working on that and remembering that in our marriages? Number two, to recognize the crazy cycle and to be ready to halt it instead of keep spinning it, but to halt and get off that merry-go-round. How many of us have been working on it? That's what God wants us to do. And number three, to recognize that we can not only need to get out of the crazy cycle, but we need to reverse the crazy cycle by getting back to speaking in love and respect. Getting back to the energizing cycle. And we talked about last time what it takes in order to do that. It takes humility. It takes that Christ-like love. And yet, it shouldn't be that difficult because we are to love one another. And we have Christ's love in us. But I want to tell you, these principles that we're talking about and we're placing within marriage can work on any relationship. Because communication is vital in any relationship, in friendship, to a parent and child relationship, to a work relationship. And so don't think that, oh, I'm single or I'm just not married at this time, that these lessons have no bearing for you. This is about communication and relationship that works really well in all relationships, especially marriage. But when we don't halt the crazy cycle, we start spinning around and around. So let's talk about what we've included in this lesson, what I call marriage moments in the Bible. This morning we're going to take a look at the marriage of Nabal and Abigail, found in 1 Samuel chapter 25, if you want to begin turning there. I often jokingly say that this is one of the marriages in the Bible that clearly show that they arranged their marriages. When you look at Nabal versus Abigail, well, Nabal's a name that means fool or folly, foolishness. And we see that's exactly what he was. He lived up to his name. But on the other side, you have Abigail, who is a beautiful, humble woman. I have no idea what she looked like outwardly, but she was a beautiful woman in spirit, inside, able to humble herself. And I would imagine Abigail spent a lot of time in her marriage just going around and fixing all the problems her foolish husband had created. And this is just one example of how this happened and how she went about to do that. And so to set up the story, to really look at this couple, this is a period where David is fleeing for his life from King Saul, who's trying to obviously kill him. But David has gathered certain Israelites to himself. In fact, he has a nice little army of 600 men. Now imagine you're trying to flee and hide yourself, but you not only have to hide yourself, you have to hide 600 men. So one of the places David found some safety and some seclusion was in the fields of Nabal. And so his men were out there in his fields, but as kind of a replacement, they took care of Nabal's servants. And they were kind to Nabal's servants. And they were, in essence, kind of a wall of protection for Nabal's servants. They tried to make it kind of a win-win situation. But then came what must have been a very challenging thing, is that David and his men needed food. And so he had to try to find food, not only for himself, but for these 600 men they had vowed to protect and to travel and to hide and to flee with David. And so David gets a delegation of men and he sends them to Nabal. And look, if you would, at 1 Samuel 25 and in verse 9. And when David's young men came, they spoke to Nabal according to all these words in David's name. And then they waited. But Nabal answered David's servants and said, "Who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants today who are each breaking away from his master." Notice the defiance of Nabal. He kind of is imitating a little bit of another Bible character earlier on in the Old Testament, the king of Egypt, Pharaoh. Remember when Moses came and said, "Yahweh says, let his people go. Let my people go." And what was Pharaoh's response? "Who's Yahweh? I don't know Yahweh. Why should I listen to Yahweh?" Well, that's kind of what Nabal is saying. "Who's David? I don't know David. Why should I do this for David?" And then he says, "There's lots of servants who are running away from their master." Yeah, but how many of them have 600 men with them? So verse 11, he says, "Shall I take..." And now we have the rich fool here. Notice this. "Shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I have slaughtered for my shears and give it to men whose origin I don't know? So David's young men retraced their way and went back, and they came and told him according to all these words. And David said to his men, each of you gird up his sword. So each man girded on his sword, and David also girded his sword. About 400 men went up behind David, while 200 stayed with the baggage. In essence, David was so furious, he said, we're going to battle. Get ready. Look at verse 14. But one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, and I would imagine this isn't the first time this has happened, saying, behold, David's messenger sent into the wilderness to greet our master, and he scorned them. And yet, the men have been very good to us, and we were not insulted, nor did we miss anything, as long as we went about with them, and while we were in the fields. They were a wall to us. Behold, both by night and by day, all the time we were with them tending the sheep. And now therefore, know and consider what you should do. For evil is plotted against our master and against all his household. And he is such a worthless man that no one can speak to him. No one can speak to him. No one can communicate with him. And so verse 18, Abigail hurried and took 200 loaves of bread and 2 jugs of wine and 5 sheep of sheep already prepared and 5 measures of roasted grain, and you get the picture. But look at what happens when she catches up to David. Verse 23, when Abigail saw David, she hurried and dismounted from her donkey and fell on her face before David and bowed herself to the ground. What a contrast. And she fell at his feet and said, on me alone, my Lord, be the blame. And please let your maidservant speak to you and listen to the words of your maidservant. Please do not let my Lord pay attention to this worthless man Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, your maidservant, did not see the young man of my Lord whom you sent. And the story goes on, where she eventually turns David's wrath and he goes away. She saves the day. But what I want you to notice is the contrast between how Nabal talks to people and how Abigail addresses them. Very different. Abigail was able to humble herself and to speak in a language that David, what, would see as respectful. When Nabal didn't speak with respect, what happened? David was upset. In fact, wanted to kill him. And David was so impressed with Abigail and her spirit that after Nabal died, in which the Lord took his life, just a few days later, verse 37-38, David came back and made Abigail one of his many wives. But see, brother, sister, Christ, when we're in the energizing cycle, we are communicating like Abigail. But when we get on the crazy cycle, we become the foolish Nabal oftentimes. And we speak to the one we love with scorn and disrespect and in an unloving way. When we get on a crazy cycle, I want to ask you, when we're in that crazy merry-go-round spinning cycle, whose needs are we looking out for? Who are we really thinking about when we're in that crazy cycle? The answer is very clear. Not our spouse, but our own.
And it might be because, well, we're justified because we are hurt because of what they did or what they said or how they're not understanding what we're doing or what we're saying. But what we ultimately do is we think of our own selves and we're defending ourselves and we're looking out for our needs and we're really angry because we feel like we're not getting what we need from the one that we love.
So when spouses start attacking one another, it's like stepping on each other's air hose.
Dr. Ingritz, in his book, gives this great illustration that when we're on the crazy cycle, it's like both spouses need oxygen, and they've got this oxygen mask on, both of them, and they have this tube, you know, it's this long tube, because you got to walk through the house, you got right? And eventually the tube gets to the oxygen tank. And what happens when you're in the crazy cycle, you're not thinking of your spouse, and it's like you're stepping on their air hose. You don't want them to get any air. You don't want them to have anything that they need. So what do? They step on your air hose. And so you got two people
stepping on each other's air hoses, not able to breathe. Well, if that actually happened, what would you have to? You'd have to get them off your air hose. You'd have to stop what you're doing because you're going to kill yourselves. But when we're in that crazy cycle, we don't look at it that way.
And so I want to talk about some things that not only get us on the crazy cycle, but keep us on the crazy cycle.
Things that we say that don't help matters, but like your dad, just get that merry-go-round spinning faster and faster and faster and faster.
If only she weren't so sensitive. If he weren't so touchy. That's what's really going on here. This is all about her being so... Well, he's just so touchy all the time. You ever say something like that? Think something like that? Right?
Well, what this is an example of is that the real issue is seldom the real issue.
When you're in the crazy cycle, a lot of times you're not dealing with the issue itself, you're dealing with your feelings about the issue. Because of the issue, you feel hurt. You feel disrespected. You feel unloved. And so now what? You're going to spin that cycle even more because you want to show this person that you love how they've hurt you.
And so what do? You start putting the blame game.
This is all about, she's just so sensitive. It's all about, he's just too touchy.
And that's what happens. We don't deal with the issue. We deal with our reaction to how we feel or what has happened because of the issue.
So, let's say we have a husband and a wife. And she's just had it. Because she's asked him several times to pick up his dirty socks from the floor. And he's not doing it. He, for some reason, he refuses to do that. And so she starts what? Attacking him.
But it's not really about the socks. It's because the fact that he doesn't pick up his socks makes her feel unloved. And so she attacks him not because of the socks, but because of how that reaction, his lack of action, makes her feel. And so what does he do? He starts attacking her character. And we enter into the crazy cycle. She doesn't feel loved, so she attacks. As a result, he feels disrespected, so he attacks back. And the crazy cycle begins. But it's really her fault, because she's so sensitive. It's all about him because he's so touchy. And then once we're on that crazy cycle, we spin it out of control with sometimes what we call loaded or escalated words. Because what? They escalate the crazy cycle, the argument, to a whole new level. Instead of halting and stopping and trying to get back to the energizing cycle, we take that merry-go-round and round and round. Have you ever said something like this? You always do this. Or you never do this. These are words that when someone hears them, again, it takes us off the issue, and now we're hurt because we know deep down that's not true. I don't always do that. It's not true that I never pick up my socks. But that's what happens when we're on the crazy cycle. We use these loaded words like "you always" and "you never." And we need to be very careful. And it only comes with conscious training to stop ourselves from using those words. But sometimes we use them because, one, we're upset, we're hurt. But we also use them because we know it's a good way to kind of zing our partner. It's a way of trying to get them to see just how bad we're hurt. Or, here's another one. "I wish you were more like blank. Why can't you be more like blank?" Do we really like to be compared to someone else? Number one, it hurts because it leaves this impression that the one I love doesn't really think that I'm worth loving. And not only that, but the idea that she thinks someone else has a better quality. That can lead to a lot of hurt feelings and a lot of fear. And so not only are we on the crazy cycle, we're going around and around and spinning faster and faster. And that's why, as our homework, we want to work on recognizing we're entering the crazy cycle so we can stop it. And we can reverse it. And we can get back to the energizing cycle. Another thing that often loads up or spins us out of control or escalates an argument is that we expect the worst in our spouse. And this is where, in the heat of the moment, in the argument, where we don't, our spouse hasn't done this, but we expect them. We just know they're going to do it. And so we say something, or we bring some type of action or some type of judgment against them, because we just know what is on their heart. We know they're going to do the worst possible thing. And your spouse says, What are you talking about? I haven't done that. I'm not going to do that. Oh, but I know you are. When we expect the worst in our spouse, then usually what? That probably is what is going to eventually happen. And so one of the things that's going to help us in our communication is to give the one we love, the one we have entered into a covenant relationship for life with, the benefit of the doubt. To expect good things from them. And not to assume that they have in their mind and in their plans the worst things. And so communication, improving communication, can even be watching out for what you say. Using loaded and escalated words to spin the crazy cycle over and over. Let's look at a few passages I think fit well here.
Luke chapter 14, verse 34 and 35. We're going to kind of use the theme of salt, where Jesus says, "Therefore salt is good, but even if salt has become tasteless, with what will it be seasoned? It is useless either for soil or for the manure pile. It is thrown out." And then Jesus says, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear."
Salt was something that was so important in those days because it gave food flavor. It gave food taste. And food wasn't like it is today, where it's processed and so forth. It's all made for the taste. And so they used salt to give that which was plain or bland, give it some taste, some flavor. And Jesus says, "We're salt. You are to be salt to your spouse." But when we're in this crazy cycle, we become that tasteless salt. We're not giving any flavor. We're not seasoning our words. And so we become useless, ready to be thrown out to the manure pile. To get to that energizing cycle, we need salt. We need flavor in our marriage. That's what we want to bring. In Colossians chapter 4, verse 6, Paul says, "Let your speech always," not part of the time, not some of the time, not when we're not fighting, "let your speech always be with grace, seasoned as it were with salt, so that you may know how you should respond to each person." Notice that you may know. The Bible presents, especially in the New Testament, this idea that Christians don't just say whatever's on their mind, but they think about what they say. They're purposeful in what they communicate to others, what they deliver to people. There's a right thing to say. And so we have to have our speech seasoned like salt. And if we can't do that in marriage, to our spouse, does it even mean anything if we do it outside of marriage? Needs to start at home. In James chapter 3, and I'm going to kind of take this out of order, I'm going to start in verse 11 and 12, then I'm going to jump back to verses 9 and 10. But James 3, 11 and 12, James says, "Does a fountain send out from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brethren, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Neither can salt water produce fresh water." So what's James talking? He's given all these illustrations about this weird phenomenon that never happens. A fountain doesn't bring out fresh water and then sometimes bitter water. A fig tree doesn't produce olives and then sometimes figs. Neither does a vine produce figs some of the time. Salt water doesn't produce fresh water. But look what he says about us and our speech and our tongue. And talking about the tongue, he says, "With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. For from the same mouth come both blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be this way." He says Christians need to use the speech for salt and flavor. We need to bless and build up. But sometimes we use that tongue to what? Curse. And ultimately, I love that in verse 11, where we bless God and then curse man. He's talking about the Christian relationship, but just place that in marriage. It fits so well. Let us bless our spouse. Let us recognize when we're entering the crazy cycle. And let us have salt in our words. So it's your choice. You can be in an energizing cycle. Yeah, it takes some work. It takes us a conscious effort. But I want to tell you, it's well worth it. Or you could choose the crazy cycle and keep spinning and spinning and spinning until you have no more oxygen because you're stepping on each other's air hoses. I know which one God wants us to choose. And I hope that if this is something that, you know, has been a problem, that you'll pray to God about it and that you'll work this out with love and humility. It's not easy to admit wrong. It's not easy to change. But we do end each lesson with a call to anyone that not only needs to come back to the Lord, to humble themselves and say, I've been wrong, Lord. I have wronged you. I want to communicate with love and respect to you. And anyone that might need our help in doing that, or anyone that needs to come to the Lord and to have their sins forgiven, to become a child of God, we're ready to take that final step with you and to baptize you into Christ. If we can help you speak love and respect to the Savior, to God, won't you let that be known as together we stand and as we sing.
If the grandest thing through the ages